Welcome to the FarmBeats podcast.
FarmBeats is proudly produced by the Nebraska Digital Agricultural Team and hosted by students at the University of Nebraska.
The FarmBeats podcast comes to you each week to discuss the trends, the realities, and the value of digital agriculture.
Through interviews with experts, producers, and innovators from across the agricultural industry, we hope that you step away from each episode with new practical knowledge of digital agriculture technology. Hello, FarmBeats followers, and welcome to another episode of the FarmBeats podcast. I'm Katie Bathke.
And I'm Deepa Gimire, and we are glad to have you with us as we begin our discussion on carbon markets with John Sanaha, Senior Science Manager with Agro Carbon Alliance. Hi, John. Welcome to the FarmBeats podcast. Can you please introduce yourself and share your thought background where you are up until today?
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Deepak, for the opportunity to introduce myself. I'm really pleased to join you all here in this discussion. So a little bit about myself. I always like to tell folks that I grew up on a farm not very far from Lincoln, just about an hour north and west of here. So that's kind of always grounded me in terms of working for growers. Everything that I've ever spent my entire career on is around providing solutions to help growers become more profitable and also more sustainable in the things they do. So a little bit about in terms of background, I received a BS degree from the University of Nebraska in agronomy here a few years back, and then did my graduate work at Colorado State University, where I in turn stayed for a few years. It was a professor there, worked in extension, working with growers, providing them advice around how to you know, cropping practices to be more sustainable. Then returned back to Lincoln and worked with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Agricultural Research Service for a few years. There I was working on nitrogen management topics. And then after that, I took a job with Corteva, and I was in the agronomy sciences team. Then again, providing support and research and efforts to information to growers around nitrogen management. And most recently now, I've taken a position with the GORL, Carbon Alliance, where I'm the head of the science team, leading the effort there around science of soil carbon.
That's awesome. Such a rich history too. So many different areas that you've been involved in. So we're really excited to hear about, and can you tell us a bit about Agoro Carbon Alliance and how it started?
Right. So Agoro is a startup company of Yara International. They're an international fertilizer company located over in Oslo, Norway. That's the headquarters, but they have a large global footprint. They're on, I can't remember the number of employees they have, that they're a global company and provides fertilizer solutions, crop protection inputs, and things like that. And they've made an effort to talk about regenerative agriculture and how that can improve, reduce the carbon footprint for agriculture. And so we're totally owned by Yara International. I joined the company back in 2021, and been with them since basically that's the beginning of the company. But we're a separate company, sort of to maintain some independence from Yara, if you will.
Yeah, glad to know about this initiative of Agoro Carbon Alliance, and we are excited to learn more about that. So can you please tell us what are the different services that are provided by the Agoro Carbon Alliance?
Right. So currently we are what we call a carbon project developer. So we're a company that's basically vertically integrated in terms of we work with growers, we incentivize them to implement practices such as no-till cover cropping, and then in range and pasture, we incentivize ranchers to increase their rotational grazing practices, add some small amounts of nitrogen fertilizer to increase carbon sequestration. And then the other thing is we ask them to introduce like leguminous species into native range systems. Again, all these practices have been shown by research. All things that we incentivize growers to do have been shown by research. Research that's been done, for example, at the University of Nebraska, that actually increase soil carbon. And so that's really what we are. So in terms of a project, we incentivize the growers to do this. We ask them to sign a contract with us for 10 years. And then we measure the carbon that accumulates in the soil over the course of those 10 years. And then we we sell that on the voluntary carbon markets. And so the idea is that we take that revenue, we obviously collect a small portion of that revenue to pay for soil sampling and some of the activities we do, but we return that revenue back to the grower to incentivize them to implement these practices.
That's awesome. I love that it's research-based and that you're showing that you're working with growers for a long term, like signing on for 10 years. I feel like that's very unique within the industry, and I really think that's awesome. So can you expand a little bit on what is carbon credit and how it works? This topic might be a little bit newer to our growers, and we're wanting to hear your thoughts on it.
Sure. So, I mean, basically carbon credit is a lot of farmers think about carbon in the soil as organic matter. But in this case, what we're selling on the voluntary markets is actually the tons of carbon that are sequestered in the soil associated with a regenerative practice. And so organic matter is about half of carbon. And so the role, for example, of the science team that I'm the head of is we developed the methodology. We follow one of the standard practices, the methodology practices that I'm not sure if your listeners will have heard of Verra, but they're essentially like an auditing company, somebody that would go in and audit a bank and make sure everything is, you know, is transparent. And so we have used their methodology, and we use a procedure called measure and model. So we measure the soil carbon with soil samples. So for example, a grower signs up with this in year one, we're out there collecting soil sample data. To measure how much carbon is in the soil when they initiate these practices. And then we're back in year five and then year 10. And the difference in carbon accumulated over those years is basically the carbon credit. So what we have to do is basically confirm with the buyer that this is a legitimate asset, just like a bushel of corn that can be sold on the voluntary markets. So if there's a ton of carbon in that soil that's accumulated over 5 years or within over the course of 10 years, maybe 5 or 6 tons, then that's the carbon that can be sold on the voluntary markets. We also use, in between our soil sampling events, the modeling approaches. We use a model called the Descent Carbon Model. It's a biogeochemical model. Actually, there's folks at the University of Nebraska that have worked on this. It's been developed over the course of about 20 years. The model actually references back to when I was at Colorado State University. That's kind of where it originated. Again, it's a biogeochemical model that kind of simulates what's going on in the soil. We can use that model to kind of help verify and kind of corroborate what we've seen with our soil measurements. Both of them kind of guide each other, if you will.
That sounds really interesting. Thank you for explaining that. I think that was pretty simple and easy to follow through. When we are talking about these credits and thinking about the partnership with the farmers, how do you think farmers can benefit from these carbon credit service, and what would be expected out of them?
Right. Great question, Deepak. So the way we always like to explain it to growers is the carbon revenue that they will receive from these voluntary markets is perhaps not enough to really pay for all the things that they're going to do. But what we always talk about is when they implement these practices, they see a significant improvement in soil health. Carbon essentially does a lot of good things for the soil. It increases water infiltration, you get better nutrient cycling, you get a lot of different benefits associated, maybe reduction in how much nitrogen fertilizer you have to apply, or maybe less crop protection chemicals because the cover crops compete with weeds. And so there's a whole bunch of associated agronomic benefits that come along with increasing soil carbon. And so that's kind of what we like to tell them is, when you stack all these different revenues together, then it starts to become meaningful resources for your operation. And we try to front load the incentives that we give to the growers at the beginning of the contract, so that if they have to buy some equipment, you know, pay for some fertilizer, like in a rangeland situation, add some additional fencing if they want to rotationally graze, then they've got some resources to implement that practice that they wouldn't have had originally.
Awesome. I like that. I like how you explained it kind of for our viewers and kind of what their specific benefits are. I think that's really, really nice way to bring that into the interview. And then I guess our next question is, what tools and technologies are you deploying in the company to measure, report, and verify soil carbon?
Right. So we have a team of about 11 data scientists. There's agronomists, soil scientists, modeling people that we have a team of that implement this Descent model. And so that's some of the technology we use. Remote, like Sentinel satellite imagery, we use the USDA provides us with really high resolution ground imagery. It's called NAIP imagery. And so we're using that kind of information to kind of stratify our fields into different zones. You can kind of think of that as like management zones. Maybe your listeners would know what that means. So almost all these fields that we enroll are very highly variable. They have a lot of spatial variability in them. And what we have to do is stratify those fields down into different strata so that we can report the carbon that's accumulated in those different strata. And so we sample a minimum of like 6 soil sample points within a given strata to represent the carbon in there. So that way we're kind of accounting for that spatial variability. And when we do it that way, we're measuring carbon much more accurately. What we tell growers is in order for us to be able to show a change in carbon over 5-10 years, we need to measure the carbon within a 10% margin of error. Think about margin of error. That's when people talk about polling outcomes, they always talk about the margin of error of that poll is 10% or less. So that's what we have found, is that in order to measure carbon accurately enough to show a response over time or an increase over time, then that's kind of what we have to do. And we're actually looking at some approaches for simplifying and cheapening the cost of measuring carbon. Right now, what we use is we collect a soil sample from the field. I think many of your growers probably are familiar with that process in terms of soil fertility. So you collect the soil sample, you send it to a lab, and then you get the carbon analysis from that. But there are some folks working on what we are calling proximal sensing methods for measuring carbon. Probably some of your folks have heard of that, like Veris, EC Tech, environmental, or it's electrical conductivity measurement. Some of those sort of approaches have been shown to be correlated with measuring carbon as opposed to sending into the lab. And so we're evaluating that kind of technology to cheapen the cost of measuring that carbon so that whatever savings that we get by using those approaches, we can pass on to the grower then.
That's awesome. I love how you can really see that your company's being very collaborative, especially on like the modeling and the data end, and then as well as like how you're making this more accessible to farmers and trying to find tools that can better fit what their needs are. I really like that.
That's great to see that you are using models, and also like you mentioned about some technologies that you are trying to incorporate in order to measure the soil carbon in an effective way. On that note, what do you think, how accurate and reliable current state of art technologies such as the soil sensing device or soil sensing instrument that you talked and others are in terms of like measuring, reporting, and verification of the soil carbon?
Mm-hmm. The answer to that question I would say is it's getting much better every day, because there are a lot of people working in this space. I was at a conference in San Francisco last week, the World Agritech Summit, and so basically most of the focus of this session was around sustainable agricultural practices, and the carbon credit markets were a center theme of that conference. And it was just amazing how many companies are investing in this, how much startup companies. We talked to several of those folks that are working in this proximal sensing and remote sensing using satellite imagery, and we're going to work with whoever we think has the best solutions. And I would say, you know, every day we're getting more accurate in our ability to measure carbon.
That's awesome to hear. We love to hear it. My next question is kind of talking about how specifically do your products at Agoro Carbon Alliance fit with other sustainable practices, such as transitioning from strip from no-till and then managing nitrogen and kind of adding cover crops? Like, how do you fit into that?
Right. So a lot of times what's happened, like, for example, growers that do not adopt these practices, I think as we all know, the research has shown that cover crops, for example, can increase soil carbon, but there's a cost associated with that. And again, where we kind of try to come in is we help them offset some of those costs, not necessarily all those costs, but if they can get some incentives up front, then that's where we might see some additional adoption of these practices. I think cover cropping right now across the U.S. is adopted on about 5% of the acres in the U.S. And it's that cost associated with implementing that practice that has prevented growers from doing that.
Hey, that sounds really interesting, and that leads us to another question here. That what do you think are the challenges ahead in advancing the carbon market, particularly maybe we are talking about adoption of these practices, right? Farmers are hesitant to practice, and one of the things that you just highlighted is cost options. Are there like other challenges or anything that comes to your mind regarding the challenges?
Yeah, I would say the number one challenge right now is the what carbon credits are commanding out there in the voluntary markets. There's still just a lot of uncertainty. A lot of people have called this the Wild West in terms of what's going on in terms of these carbon markets. And so it's like any kind of a new activity, you have to build confidence and trust in the marketplace. And that's one role we're trying to play is we're trying to convince buyers by the scientific methodology that we're using that these are actually legitimate carbon credits. And so they have value. And if you're a Microsoft or somebody like that looking to offset your carbon credits, these are credits that are really going to have high value in the marketplace. And they're going to be something that you can transparently claim is a legitimate carbon credit. So the USDA has gotten involved into this. They're putting a lot of resources into what we call the measurement, the modeling and measuring of carbon in soil. And so by the USDA participating in this, I think they add a lot of legitimacy to this activity. There were a lot of, I don't know how much familiar your listeners were with the with some of the grants that went out this past year around climate smart agriculture. All of those sort of things, I think, are going to help get this launch, this carbon credit market, get it off the ground.
I love that you bring it up, kind of calling it the Wild West. I feel like while carbon markets are not my specific place of study, when I do hear about these things, it's a lot of the conversation is, what is the legitimacy? How do I know what I'm doing is accurate? How do I know that this is correct? And where do I see value in this? How can I approach growers with having value in this? So those are all really excellent, excellent, phenomenal points to be making. I really enjoy that your company is being collaborative and trying to be at the forefront of where the science is and finding these accessibility and solving some of these challenges that growers face with this very new topic, and kind of prioritizing why they should care about this topic and why there is value in it. So I think that's really awesome that you bring out all of those points. I think they're super beneficial for, especially for our listeners or for anybody who's kind of wondering about what digital ag looks like for the carbon market and what kind of companies, what are we doing out there, and what is the next step and how can we solve some of these issues? So I really, really like that. Thank you. Yes. So you did talk to us a little bit about how Agoro Carbon is working to adapt to these challenges for farmers and ranchers. Do you have any more you'd like to add on that subject?
Yeah. I mean, I guess one thing I would like to say too is that the Yara is very serious about this. And so we're very fortunate to be working with a company that put a big stake in the ground. They're actually in the process of working on green ammonia fertilizer production using wind power and things like that. So to me, that's one of the reasons I joined this company, is because Yara's commitment to decarbonizing agriculture and making it a more sustainable practice going forward. And so, yeah, I think without having that kind of backing, there might be some concern. I mean, a buyer might say, well, is this company going to be around next year? Because there's been a lot of these companies that have shown up on the scene, and then a year or two down the road, they're gone. And so the fact that they're making these kind of commitments says to me, and hopefully it says to the grower and to the buyer, that they're serious about making this work.
That's awesome. An excellent point to bring up.
Yeah, that's great to know that this company is very committed on helping towards sustainable farming practices. We just talked a little bit about use of proximal and satellite sensors in terms of the carbon market development. Are there any other digital ag tools that you think will be important in helping the development of the carbon market?
Relative to digital ag tools, I think one thing to highlight and call out, and maybe for students like yourself that are thinking about careers in this space in digital ag, I think it's important to have a good science and technology background in engineering and soil science and in some of the modeling approaches. And the other thing is we've collected already, I don't know, in the thousands of soil samples, and just an incredible amount of information that we have there. We're starting to use some machine learning and advanced data sciences approaches to kind of getting some learnings from this. In other words, if we have soil sample, we've got growers signed up in 20 states now, about 300, you know, quite a few growers. We've collected a lot of soil samples, and there's just an immense amount of knowledge associated with those, because where the soil samples came from and how much carbon's in that soil, but we've got climate data to go with it. We got the practices that these growers have implemented. And so there's just going to be an immense amount of learnings, and it's going to take some really smart data scientist type people to figure out and uncover those learnings, if you will. But it's just an incredible source of information that we're starting to collect now. So
I love that. I love the vast knowledge and learning approach that your company is taking. I like, you can tell how you're collecting all of this data to do a very accurate and solid science job of characterizing what you're seeing. And I think that's really important and really valuable to highlight, especially in terms of carbon market and how that's being related in within the data to other sustainable measures such as climate and some of those things. So I like, you can really see how your company is this bigger picture, and it's tying in a lot of these different factors and really on some of the cutting edge of the data sciences as well. So it's really awesome for you to point out. I love that. And then I'm going to transition us a little bit into our next question, which is, what are you most looking forward to in the future for the carbon market?
Well, I guess what I'm most looking forward to is I hopefully the prices of carbon credits will increase over time as there becomes more confidence in these credits, because I think the growers, the revenue that can be received from these practices is a lot of it's dependent upon the carbon value. And so I think our company hopes that all these companies that have made some very significant commitments to greenhouse gas reduction start to see carbon credits as a way that they can reduce their footprint, you know, like the Microsofts of the world, the Googles of the world and whatnot, that need to offset their carbon footprint.
Excellent point.
And then as we are talking here about AgroCarbon Alliance is mostly dealing with crop producers. And is it like something that ranchers can also take advantage of? Or like, can you just talk about what aspects of farming communities mm-hmm. can benefit from these company services?
Yeah, great question, Deepak, and appreciate that question. Actually, a lot of our growers that we've signed up to date are actually ranchers.
Okay.
And yeah, they've received again these incentives. We've actually done some interviews with some of our marketing folks have been out on these ranches, and where we've been able to get them resources, for example, to move water around their pastures so they can move the cattle around. The resources have been used to buy additional fences so that they can sequester those cattle in smaller paddocks. The whole concept of rotational grazing is that you take a big pasture that's maybe 5,000 acres and you divide it up into smaller paddocks, if you will, and you move the cattle around kind of in a rotational sequence. And so what the whole idea there is that you give that area of the farm or the ranch a little bit of time to rest. And when you, by doing that, by implementing those sort of practices, you actually increase the amount of forage that farm ranch can produce, because you're giving it that rest period and you're sequestering additional carbon in the soil. So they not only get some of the benefits associated with the carbon that gets stored in the soil, but they're getting an increased amount of productivity. A lot of the ranchers that we talk to say that they can increase their herd size 10% because of the increase in forage production that they get from these practices. So ranchers have been one of the more successful enrollees in our program. We have some row crop producers, but the ranching community has really reached out to us in a very significant way.
That's That's awesome to hear. I love that you brought up one who the communities that Agoro Carbon is reaching, and then also some of the benefits that they're seeing when they use your company. And that's and really cool. Thanks for sharing. It'll lead perfectly into our next question, and that is, if our listeners wanted to learn more about the work that you were doing, where can they find that information?
Right. So if you go to Agoro Carbon Alliance, just Google our webpage there. And we try to provide a lot of information. Like, there's a calculator there that if a grower is interested, we're using a kind of an estimator. So if they say they want to implement rotational grazing or no-till or cover cropping, we're using basically what's the Comet Farm tool. It's an estimator of how much carbon you can sequester, so they can get kind of an idea of what kind of revenue they could receive from those fields. We have what we call the knowledge hub there too. So a lot of us agronomist types have written some articles there that kind of provide a little bit of a definition and explanation of our program, how these practices work on your farm and ranch, and the benefits that you can see from it. There's some podcasts on there, as a matter of fact.
I've done a couple of those.
Yeah.
That's awesome. We love to hear it.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with the team of folks that we have on our company. They're all very bright young folks that have brought a lot of expertise to the company. And so we have a team, what's called a grower success team. Besides like science team, our team basically is responsible for developing the methodologies to measure the carbon. But then we have a team of folks that work with growers. You know, they're out there talking to them. They kind of help them along in that journey of how they implement these practices so that they're successful. Because when they're successful, then we're going to be successful and everybody's successful, I guess. So we've got those people are located all around the United States. So like in the, you know, where we got ranching acres, like there's folks located in those areas. And again, they travel out there, they visit with the rancher, they talk to the farmer, and help them kind of all adopt these practices along the way of the journey.
I love that it's both ends of the string helping each other. I like that aspect. That's awesome.
Yeah, I find that really interesting. Working one team working on science aspect and one team working on just with farmers. I think that's really helpful for farmers as well. And then in return to the company.
We also have a group that's selling these carbon credits. And so they explain what we're doing to the Microsofts of the world, companies that be interested in buying the credits. And the point there is they're trying to communicate to these folks that what Agoro is doing in terms of providing legitimate carbon assets can help us get the most value for that carbon revenue.
Hey, that's great to know. And is there anything we didn't talk about today and you would like to share with our listeners?
So what I know what a lot of our people that talk with growers every day, talk to them and tell them, make sure that you do your homework, because there are some people, you know, there are some programs out there that maybe don't give you all the details. And we also tell folks that these programs are not for everybody. And so rather than lead somebody on and think that this is a panacea that's going to solve all their problems, we would say, no, that's not the case. This revenue can help you offset some of your costs. But again, what we really emphasize is the practices in and of themselves provide benefits to the grower, agronomic benefits that when coupled with the carbon revenue starts to make a difference.
That's awesome. I love that you point that out, that you how you work within the communities that you're working with, how your company fits them and maybe not fits everybody. And I think that's such an important thing to encompass, especially when we're talking about such kind of a new topic for people, and it can be, and new can kind of be scary. So I like how your company's approaching it. It looks like you're covering a lot of bases between the science and what's similar to the extension work that universities do, things like that. So I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, we really lean a lot on the research that comes out of land-grant universities and USDA. I mean, basically, the science behind what we're doing is all been done by folks like UNL and other universities around the country and the world, for that matter. We're actually working we're building a program in Brazil as well. So
that's awesome. That is awesome. We love to hear it. Being at the university doing the research, we love to hear that it's making a difference.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have one last question for you, John, and it's a tradition on the Farm Bits podcast is to ask for a piece of advice. So what advice would you give to anybody interested in learning more about the carbon market or utilizing this on their operation?
Yeah, I would first direct you towards our webpage, the Agoro Carbon Alliance. And if they really want to get to know, there's like some of these registries, carbon registries, like they can Google Verra. And there you'll be able to see, like, we actually have a document that there. It's what we call our project development document. So if you really want to know what we're up to, it's like a 100-page document. So you'd have to spend some time, if you can't sleep some night, well, maybe read through that document. But every company that's out there that's in this space is probably registered with one of these, what we call carbon registries. Verra is one. There was one called the Climate Action Reserve. It's out of California. All these programs provide some transparency to the grower, to the buyer, and for folks that are like yourself that might be interested in a career in this field. I would encourage anybody that's, you know, like you, if you folks are thinking about this as a career opportunity, like, get as much information and knowledge about this as you can, and so that you can make an informed decision.
Thank you very much to John for taking the time to join this episode of the Farm Bits podcast. It's really exciting to learn how Agoro Carbon Alliance is working hands-on with growers for science-based solutions. One of my favorite parts of this episode and what this company is doing is utilizing remote sensing science to generate accessible solutions for farmers and ranchers globally.
I would have to agree. My favorite part of the episode was learning about the multidimensional approach of the company working with farmers and other big companies to provide benefits to the farming communities. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to sharing another digital ag story with you next week on Farm Bits.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today on the Farm Bits podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts to be informed about the latest content each week.
We welcome your feedback. So if you have any comments or questions for us, please reach out to us over email, on Twitter, or in the review section of your favorite podcast platform. Our contact information can be found in the show notes.
We would like to thank Nebraska Extension for their support of this podcast and their commitment to providing high quality informational material to members of the agricultural community in Nebraska and beyond.
The opinions expressed by the host and guest on this podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the views of Nebraska Extension or the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
We look forward to you joining us next week for another episode of Farm Bits.